so expensive.
What's that?
I bought those in the Heights. They were so expensive.
I'll start hooking you up with the REITs unlimited marker supply. Okay. So I want to wrap up our discussion of Ayerson versus Nisuin. This we discussed at length in our last year. So just to remind everybody, machlokes achronim, whether the justification required in the last Mishnah in Gittin for Gittin also holds true for Ayerson, or is it limited to Nisuin? That is machlokes between two deos in the Mishnah Melech. Mishnah Melech says Samarashtam, who, after analyzing the psukim, says that that justificatory burden is limited to Nisuin, and it does not apply to Ayerson. Correct? Yes, the Mishnah Melech's response was, there's no reason to distinguish between Ayerson and Nisuin. Within the view that thought there is reason to distinguish between Ayerson and Nisuin, we saw two versions. What are the two versions of the view that thinks there is a difference between Ayerson and Nisuin vis-a-vis the justificatory burden? Josh?
Either no reason or very low.
Yeah. Do you need Rabbi Akiva? Matzah cheres na haimena. So it's just a lower justification. Or is no justification at all required? Right. And agav, we pick up the added shita that the Mishnah Melech views Rabbi Akiva as requiring justification. Right, that falls out of that perspective. So I went through a bit of a tour last year of the differences between Ayerson and Nisuin. One dimension of it was the substantive differences in dinim between an Arusa and a Nisua. And the second dimension of that analysis was about what effects, what creates the status of an Arusa versus a Nisua. And what I wanted to take out of both of those is that and here I was leaning on my father's analysis, is that an arusa, or the idea of Ayerson, is very much about a formal kinyan. We know that as kicha kicha mistei Ephron, isha niknes begimel drachim, requires edim, you could have imposed tanayim on it, you could have a shliach do it. So it's very much borrowed from the world of acquisitions and conveyances. It's like a principle of property law almost. The idea of Nisuin is different. The idea of Nisuin is about the beginning of the couple's married life. Right, so they're entering into an actual union of two people, not just that there's some legal framework for their union. Does this make sense? Is that a compelling analysis, more or less? Josh?
Other than the fact that there's a kinyan instead of kedushin, is there any ramification, like practically,
like what does kedushin do?
Like I know, like, okay, it creates a status. It creates like
yeah. So one nothing I didn't put on, I'm going to add this to the source sheet is, for example, mido raisa, an ishas kohen can eat truma. Mido raisa, because she's considered kinyan kaspa. Right, so that flows from the legal acquisition.
You could also say mido raisa, like arusa is not necessary.
So it depends. That's an interesting question.
You could say that.
As a theoretical possibility. The standard view in the Rishonim that we saw is that there's no special heter for an Arusa. Right? Even if there's no Isser Del Raisa, that can just be because any Pnuya is not an Isser Del Raisa.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's a Jewish.
What's that?
So that's like a new Isser that was created for this, or specifically for Arusa.
Correct. Yeah. Right. That would be another Nafkamina, right? Okay, good. Everyone has the big picture. Again, there could be dinim that go into effect. I alluded to this last year that once you're an Arusa, that triggers a countdown for when the Nisuin has to be effectuated.
I mean, it strengthens your point because if you say, let's say, Kiddushin, it's just, let's say, like a kinyan, which is a little more abstract, and like nothing practically actually happens versus the Nisuin, where practically goes into effect, the obligations are
right.
Like strengthens your claim.
Yeah, big picture, that's for sure too. That's the first dimension of the analysis. Look at all these dinim of marriage that are triggered by nisuin specifically.
Yeah.
Right, the reciprocal obligation, shirksos and ona, the chiyav mizonos, the husband's right to ma'aseh dayim, the yerut that he inherits her, that if a kohen he can metame to her, right? The permission of intimacy, those all flow from the nisuin dimension. Okay. You know, and I would even just put it more broadly that when you look at the psukim in Bereishis, Al ken yazov es av avimo v'davak v'ishta v'hayi l'basar efod, that's alluding, that's nisuin, right? That's not erusin. Okay? And like when you talk about the recreation of Adam, you know, together with Chava, that's all. Those are the birchas chasanim, the brachos that are associated with nisuin, not with erusin. Okay, so I think that big picture distinction is true. I would say this is already pushing the bounds of the sugya, because we have to know more for this to be interesting. I think you could say more accurately that maybe there are three dimensions to marriage, right? There's like erusin, there's nisuin, and there's like the davak v'ishto, almost as like a dimension separate from nisuin. For our purposes now, we don't have to get into that like inside analysis. Like maybe, or even for example, if you want to borrow the analysis of previous shiurim, we still get Ziva Grishon and Ziva Cheney, right? The idea that there's like some sort of bris, right? Some sort of, that only applies in some marriages. You might say, look, every marriage has nisuin, right? Every marriage has nisuin. But this third dimension, if you want to call it Ishes Briso, I think that was the language of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, right, that we borrowed from. So you might say there's like this third dimension. It's worth pondering more than afkamina of this third dimension. That's my article that I allude to in the Maran Komashi. I'm not as explicit about this three-tiered structure, but it's a good way of thinking about this. All right. So how does this relate to the question of get, which is why we're in this analysis? So I wanted to say the following, and I was using Rav Lichtenstein as a foil on this. So let's see.
What's a foil?
What is it? Help me out, Zev. Who is helping? Josh? Somebody?
What?
No,
foils
are
the counterbalance. It's like the
yeah, just somebody to work off of. Right? And Azar Kinecto. using Rav Lichtenstein as a foil, Rav Lichtenstein writes this. He says, why should there be reason to distinguish between an arusa and nesua? So I'm just going to read this from the Hebrew Shirim that, you know, there's a volume published on Gittin. So Rav Lichtenstein writes this. If the reason for the justification, etc., is that the Torah has a presumption against destroying the institution of marriage. The institution of marriage ought to be a permanent, long-lasting relationship. That's mosad hamishpachti, right? The kind of the legal institution of, he says, family really should be marriage. It's a deeper question what the relationship between the family structure and marriage. Notice in contemporary parlance, when people talk about divorce, usually the first thing that people talk about is like, what about the children? Notice how that doesn't arise at all in any of these makoros. It's just really striking, right? No one says, lo yigari shadam ha'asisho, you know, unless they're kids who still have to graduate yeshiva day school. Right? Nobody says that. But it's like really striking. That seems to be the most important consideration. I told you about the time I sat on I mentioned this last year, when I sat on a Din Torah with somebody from here. And sad story, like the couple had infant children who had some learning disabilities. And the person I was sitting with on this case was just like, I understand, like, you hate each other. Like a very young couple, like in their young 20s. Like, I understand you can't stand each other, blah, blah, blah. But these children, like, if you get divorced, you'll both get remarried. and you'll move on, you'll have like wonderful new relationships. But these children are going to be like the losers in each family now, right? Like you'll have new kids and you'll have new kids, but these kids who already have disabilities, like they're never going to have a stable home. So suck it up, like work through your difficulties and like get back together. And you're like, okay, I said my piece. Now we could go on with the divorce. But that's a perspective, I guess. Not my perspective. But notice how that perspective doesn't arise at all in these makoros. You might think that's really central to any analysis of Gershon. Right, so you have to kind of sort that through. Ezra?
Is that consideration at all in Basin?
You should ask the person I sat on the case with.
I'm saying, like, is there in Basin, you guys actually, do you, like, make women, you said,
this wasn't, like, deciding whether the divorce is okay. This is more about the how to allocate the finances and custody, but,
do you, like, discourage them from, like, getting divorced sometimes, where you'll say,
my chaver on the Besdin.
Is that, like,
right, isn't that what he was doing?
Is that typical to get an Eitzah?
Depends who you are. For some people, yes, majorly. Okay, so let's just focus on this topic at hand. So notice, I just wanted to flag then this idea of like the institution of marriage versus the idea of family. Right, those might be separate things. So Rilfenstein says, "Yitachin Shapira Kazeh Hu Bayati Kvar B'Shlav Ha'Erusin." So his thought is that maybe if you're worried about the institution of marriage, that consideration already exists at the level of Erusin. And I think that's prima facie plausible, right? Josh?
What does he mean by the institution there? Does he mean, like, the way I read him is that saying that if you, let's say, have this kinyan that you already made, if you, let's say, you break apart the kinyan and you just, like, have it, it shows that it's not really worth anything, this kinyan.
You can think about it this way, as, like, a broad policy issue. Like, halacha wants there to be stable unions.
Yeah.
Right? That's very, let's reduce that to something as mundane as it's important for social stability, it's important for economics, right? Children should be raised in kind of like stable entities, right?
Why is that relevant? Children, economics, at this stage they're not living together, there's no economic connection.
No, I'm just giving you the meta theory for this, right? So the Torah wants the institution of marriage to be permanent. Right, or to be as secure as possible, kind of like we saw in the Meiri and Sefer Chinuch at one point. So the thought is, when does marriage commence? When does that legal institution of marriage commence? It commences at Erusin. So the Torah wants that to be as permanent as possible. Like, once you sign the marriage license, like, the Torah wants it to be difficult to break that apart. Does that make sense? That's the intuition that Rav Lichtenstein is leaning on. Right, this kind of there's this legal / social institution. There's a halachic interest in it being stable and let's say firm. So since that start at Erusin, there's going to be a high justificatory burden, even for a get for an arusa. Obviously, I think that logic is plausible. So that would be the theory of the Mishnah Lamelech, right? What ground is there to distinguish between Erusin and Nisuin? Lumatzot, if the purpose of the justificatory burden is to prevent pigia beisha, what does that mean? Ben l'chaver, right? You're worried about the feelings. You're worried about the personal harm to the wife. So Buchanan says it's conceivable that when it comes to an arusa, that harm is significantly diminished. Why? Because she hasn't yet even moved in with the husband. So maybe there's no justificatory burden that has to be met. That's the thought. Everybody see that? So Buchanan thinks that maybe this machloka shakes out along the lines of, is the Mishnah Daf Tzadi about Benadol Machavero, in which case the Marashdam is right? Do you think there's no Benadol Machavero issue, or there's a significantly attenuated or diminished Benadol Machavero issue for Erusin? Maybe those two formulations just now align with the two versions in the Mishnah where you need, whether you need no justification or just a modicum of justification, whether it be a kiva or nothing, versus the idea that it's to protect the institution of marriage, in which case the institution of marriage goes into effect from Erisin. That's a Lichtenstein's view. Seb?
Yeah, just that section saw it, I think it's more in line with, like, nowadays how we view, like, engagement, I guess. Like, if you break off an engagement, that's, like, it's a thing that happened, but it's not, like, such a terrible, like, it's not, like, a tragedy. Like,
yeah.
But, like, if you divorce, even, like, a young divorce, you know, that's, it's not a tragedy. Whatever, it's, like...
So you clearly haven't been watching Schnitzel?
No.
No? Yeah. If you've been following Schnitzel, then you know that...
Schnitzel or Schnitzel?
Well, is it Schnitzel?
I think it's Schnitzel.
You clearly are following Schnitzel. You know, one of the main themes is we don't break up engagements. And they even cite, like, the Grah that I have here on the Mar Makoma sheet, that the Grah thought, supposedly... Why supposedly? I think it's just too crazy of a position to actually have been endorsed by the Grah. I mean, the Grah's position is supposed to have been, and you can see a version of this in the Keser Rosh here, that it's better to get married and then divorce than to break off an engagement. The theory being, and you can see this in the Keser Rosh, that the Torah gives you a mechanism for breaking apart a marriage. That's why I'm listening to Chaim Beina, B'chasav L'Sefer Akrisa. So it's all prescribed and planned by the Torah to break it apart this way. Shah Torah Hitira. That's preferable, that's Yoser Nachon, than Milavatel Tanoim B'tkias Kaf. Right, than breaking apart an engagement, because there's no halachic mechanism for breaking apart your commitment. Right? That's the Grah's view. Now, I think it would be shocking if somebody actually counseled you along those lines, right? Like you say, it's not going to work out. Well, you know what? Why don't you just get married and then give a get the next day? I think most of us would agree that's right. That's not really justified, especially like the wife in that case would be possible to marry a Kohen, right? A psulos, like. So it has real consequences, real world consequences. So I want to say, so that's just to push back a little bit on Zeb's point. And I'm gonna borrow from this Grah in a second. But yes, I think the intuition, Zeb's intuition is, well, just like we think that breaking off an engagement is less severe than breaking off a marriage, so do you think Erisin is really analogous to an engagement, just as an iteration? Then you can understand why. You can understand why what? You can understand
why would the burden be lesser, or the why?
So are you saying that from a personal point of view, or from the institution of marriage point of view?
That would be more of the interaction there. Right? Like, I think the modern institution of engagements is more of a, like, Benham with Alvaro. It's not as bad as a break off engagement as it is to break off a marriage.
But wouldn't you also say, so I think that's true, right? You'd say, like, you do less harm to the spouse if you break off an engagement than if you get into a bad, if you marry and then divorce shortly thereafter. That's your, so there's the path of less harm, benam l'chaveiro, is to break it off early.
Well, there's also, I guess it's also legal. It's not, the kesher isn't. So I
think you could say that you can make the same argument at the level of the integrity of marriage, right? You could say that even if you're talking about like the permanence of the institution of marriage, it's plausible to distinguish between Erisin and Nisuin, just like your engagement analogy, right? It does less violence to the long-lasting vision of the union if you break it off before, like, the union is, like, genuinely consummated. Right? At the stage of Erisin.
Yeah.
So I think you could disagree with the Lichtenstein here and say that even from this first perspective of undermining the institution of marriage, Erisin is a lower-level type of marital union than Nisuin.
Just
did everybody hear my...
He said that.
What?
Well, both Indians said that in the end. He said if it's, right, you tap on the pigia, then it's less bad.
But this is the pigia, here he means the pigia ve'isha, meaning the personal harm to the woman, not the undercutting of the integrity of the legal institution of marriage.
Right.
Right? Does everybody see that?
Yeah. But we did say the other day, I think Tanya asked about after just marriage, if the woman's ushered to a Kohen, she would be still, right? Because there's a disservice.
She's ushered to everyone, yeah.
Right, which means that legally there isn't so much of a difference between Eris and Nisuin, so it kind of does.
Well, there are all the Nafkamina, all the Nafkamina we discussed on Tuesday are Nafkamina, right? Most of the laws of marriage don't go into effect until Nisuin.
Right.
Right, so it's definitely a lower state of relationship. But then you want to push back on my...
Yeah, no, just where the analogy to engagement breaks down, it's just that engagement, I don't think there's any legal status to that, like in American law or something.
Sure, right, but I'm saying that if an arusa is somehow like the equivalent of...
Right, I'm saying we might have that intuition that it's less severe because there's in American law doesn't recognize engagements in real...
Right, I'm saying once it's kind of built into the framework of halachic relationships...
Yeah, then maybe.
And maybe it is right, but my point is, you see, there are clear nafkamina between Eris and Nisuin,
yeah.
And we have a paradigm to borrow from. We have a paradigm of Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni,
right.
Where there we know already that there are two different types of relationships, and there we know the justificatory burden shifts from one to the other. So why not just apply that same model to the Eirsin versus Nisuin relationship, right? Where Eirsin has a lower justificatory burden because it's not the same, even in the Torah's conception of what exists between them. Like, the metaphysics of what binds them is lesser in the case of Eris than in the case of Nisuin.
Wait, where do you see that? The metaphysics is different?
Well, that would just be the explanation for why, like, some dinim, most dinim depend on Nisuin, right? Because there's no v'davak v'ishe v'ayin v'basar achad in Erisin.
Yes.
Right. So that's kind of the, I think, is the better way to go than the Rebbe team. So, the machlokas, the two days in the Mishnah person Marashtam doesn't turn on whether the issue at bar is ben adam l'chavero versus undercutting the institution of marriage. Rather, it's all about the institution undercutting the institution of marriage, right? But the machlokas is whether you view erusin as being a lesser form of a union than nisuin, right? Parallel to the Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni. And I'll tell you, if the Gemara recognizes two different types of marriages in the Nisuin, Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni, that has come to combo if it's true for Eirsin marriage versus Nisuin marriage. If you have some hands, we'll take Ariel, then Tani, and Romy.
How does the Keter Roshes point have anything to do with the dichotomy between the Eirsin and the Nisuin? Because isn't the whole essence there that since it's not your stage, there's no remedy whatsoever, then it's better to actually do enter into the stage where the Torah gives you a remedy? But by Eirsin, we already have a Torah given remedy of Ket.
Yeah, so I wasn't using the Keter Rosh for that. The Keter Rosh only came up as a response to Zev, saying, well, maybe Eirsin is just like an engagement.
Oh, you're saying it's not?
Well,
and you're saying this proves.
Well, Zev was saying there's an intuition that, of course, an engagement is fine to break off. And I was saying the grub doesn't have that intuition at all. Right? You're saying a marriage is fine to break off, and an engagement is not fine to break off. That's the grub theory. I actually want to borrow this Keter Rosh for a different reason to say the following, and I'll take the other hands. So, when you think about the difference in Eirsin and Nisuin as it pertains to Get, so you can take the distinction I just gave, right, against Rav Buchenstein. Right, everyone understand that? Or you could say something a little different. You could say that along the lines of Eivar Benel, really, Eirsin is just a formal relationship. That's all it is. Right, it's just legal. And maybe the halacha doesn't care about just it's almost like a legal formality to dissolve an erisin. It's going to be a variation of what I just said. So you need a get, but you don't need to justify getting a get. But when it comes to nisuin, where you're tearing apart etzem etzamai basar mitzar lezosi harisha, there the requirement of get is not just a legal formality, but it's severing some sort of bond that one borrowed from the Zohar, you want to borrow from Sigmund Gracious. So that requires a real justification. Okay? That's a version of what I, of my suggestion, just saying that maybe for Erisin, it's just a legal formality that you require to get. Or you're not tearing apart anything special. I'm not even going about on the Havero here, right? It's about like the severance of the union. Okay? That has to be justified. One second. But I think you could even go in a slightly different way, and this came up in some of your suggestions from last year. I think Josh maybe had the suggestion. Which is, maybe if you borrow the reasoning of, well, why does a get exist? Like, why is there a capacity to break apart the union? So you might say something along the lines of the Gra, which is that there shouldn't be any basis for a get mina erisin. Like, why should you be allowed to break that apart? So yeah, maybe you have to actually be married to have nisuin, and then once you're in that type of relationship and it's like mismatched a la the barbanel, then there are grounds for dissolving it. But you might say, for the same reason that the Gra thought that there's no basis to break off an engagement, you could say, oh, at the level of erisin, maybe there shouldn't be a basis for, there shouldn't even be a heter for an allowance to give a get at that level. Right. What would be Barbanel's argument for why a get exists? It's because, oh, like, the union aspires to etzem me'atzamai, basar mibsari, those like the five kolios, but those could only exist in nisuin. So if the nisuin is not able to do that, then there exists out of a get. But you might say, like, erisin itself doesn't aspire, it's just this legal bond. It's not aspiring for, in the Barbanel's framework, the five kolios. So maybe there shouldn't even be a basis for offering a get in the first place. So you might say something along those lines, which I think would justify, would lead you to a shita that maybe there should be a greater justificatory burden for a get and an erisin than for a nisuin even. Right? Because at least in nisuin, there's like good cause to, like, an nisuin is supposed to achieve something. Doesn't achieve it, that's why a get exists. Wasn't that a Barbanel's argument? No? But erisin, which is, it's not aspiring for anything. It's just like a, Thomas says that's it. It's just an engagement. So why should there be some blocking mechanism for tearing it apart? Now, I think it's, you know, Romy.
I think that's a little problematic, first of all, because in the very basic sense that you're a little bit relying on the logic of the grub, which
is dubious anyway. Correct. Right. I said right. So I'm saying this only is true if you like the logic of the grub. Of course, you could say, well, the engagement is pointing towards an nisuin, right? It's supposed to bring you, erisin is supposed to bring you to an nisuin. So if you kind of sense at the erisin level that this is not going to work, then of course.
I say Barbanel,
the whole purpose of the erisin
I would say, right, so I think that the other reason that it doesn't work so well is because it assumes that all these things that marriage is supposed to achieve are only achieved once the nisuin happens.
Correct.
Which, as opposed to, like, these things are achieved with...
There's no dimension of, like, the Dabak Bishto or Etzem Etzamai at the erisin level.
And I think it's actually logical to think that those things are really a function of the person that you're with, and therefore, obviously, you're not as close to the person that you'd be with when you're not married, But you do have a sense of enough, you're not like how you achieve
the right. That's the environmental, what do you call it? Yivchenu shneihem. Like they'll both discern whether this is good. Okay, comments? Other comments? Yeah, Zeb.
Sure. Another reason it doesn't really make sense is if Arison is just a form of like Kenyan, it's just like a contractual thing that's going on. So it should be like every other, you know, Kenyan where you can just dissolve it whenever you want. I think if you have like a partnership or something, you can just dissolve that for no reason at all. So that seems like the basic assumption, and you might need a higher justification in this case to dissolve it, but that seems like the assumption, I guess.
That what?
Like,
in that it should be generally kinyanim are dissolvable. There's a lot of ways out of my contrarian argument that maybe dafka, like the allowance of a get, should only be for an nisuin, right? It's a little trickier, but you basically would be borrowing this idea of the gra and applying it forward to Arison. But that might explain why you think that at least there has to be a high justification, right? I think the best way to go is to explain the Maharash Dam is, as I said earlier, really, right? That there are two different types of relationships, and only the special relationship of Nisuin that has to be justified when it's teared apart, not Arison. Yeah. The Gra is like an opposite type of view. Okay, Tani, you got a hand on this?
So my hand, it was actually, that was a while. It was just the Suyomishon, Suksheni, Arison, versus Nisuin.
Yeah, parallel.
I take it so literally to the point where Arison, Nisuin, and then Suyomishon, Suksheni, all second marriages are just, Arison pairs up with second marriage. So all second marriages are just weaker or lower level.
I wouldn't say that, right? What I was arguing in the earlier Shurim was that, no, like Zugrishon, Zugsheni, attempts to pick out different types of qualitative relationships, but it doesn't always match up with first, second, third.
It's qualitative, it's not quantitative.
Yeah, like the Meiri said, Nishka Ima Bava. And I think in Sota, when they marry that same phrase of Zugrishon, Zugsheni, the Meiri said, Lav Dafka. Right? Lav Dafka, Rishon Sheni. Or Lav Dafka, like when you're young or versus old. It's just like that's usually people get married young. Right, so there's a certain type of relationship.
Yeah, you grow up with
it. Yeah, they just knew him. Yeah. Yoni.
Yeah, just in terms of the relationship between Arison and Nisuin, is Nisuin more like an evolved Arison that if you did undergo Nisuin and then want to give a get, you only have to explain why you want to dissolve Nisuin, but you also have to explain why you want to dissolve Arison?
Yeah. Josh, you're going to get something along these lines So it's a good question. I think the standard view is that it's not that the Arison gives way to Nisuin. It's just there are like two different dimensions. To like, there's every marriage has both a Kenyan and this like Nisuin of like actual union of two people coordinating their lives together. It's not that you lose the Arison at some point.
But it seemed like we were...
There's nothing enough Kamina. Like, for example, if you forgot to make the bracha of Kedushin of Arison at the Arison, could you make it a year later at the Nisuin? A lot of Rishon don't think you can. Because, like, it's not like that Arison goes away or is done. It's still, like, a present thing.
But also, like, in terms of conceptualizing, it seemed like we were, like, going back and forth. That, like, the Arison could have been the legal formality, right? And then as soon as more of like the is it going to go and like
yeah.
together, but then it also Nisuin very much is a legal thing also.
Well, it has legal ramifications, but I wouldn't say that it functions as a type of kinyan or acquisition or formal, right, formally affected.
The Nisuin doesn't?
Right, the Nisuin doesn't. That's the view that I was quoting from my father.
So the Arison is the real Kenyan part, and the Nisuin is more of the union.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I think it could be argued that every marriage, like while you're married, you have Arison and Nisuin, right? The Arison is always in place. There's no the get is just about the Arison. Gosh, things are your
in the world of the Rama.
Yeah.
Not a brotherly Mormon,
Right. Well, the Ravenel thinks that thing, right. The Ravenel clearly thinks the get has to do with the Nesuit.
If anything, the Ravenel would say that the get has nothing to do with the Nesuit.
Oh,
the
Nesuit. Good. So you could say that, look, the reason why a get exists is just for the Erisin component, right? Because the legal bond has to be legally dissolved. But the justification, like, why do you have to justify giving a get? That has to do with the Nesuin. Right? Arguably. Because you have to justify tearing apart this union of, like, this bond of two people that are one.
Didn't the grasp there's no way to halachically, like, a mechanism for resolving the Erisin?
That's for a tonight, for an engagement. Right. So I'm saying you could say, of course, the get always is just about the Erisin, but the thing that requires the justification for giving a get has to do with the Nesuin. So the level of justification doesn't always have to align with what the get is actually dissolving. Just bear that in mind. Benji, you got a hand?
Yeah, I was just going to ask Kasha on Schdissel.
Yeah, I was here.
I thought that in Schdissel they did the Tanayim at the actual engagement. And the Tanayim are like riddled with all this terrible stuff, and that's why.
Yeah. This is a discussion, and most people just do Tanayim at the Chasen's Tish, right? But I think the standard view is that you don't need to sign Tanayim for the halachic status of Shiduchim to go into effect. It's like, one, I think Rav Moshe has a tshuva, and other people say this, once you're engaged and you publicly declare your engagement, like all the halachic associations of Tanayim go along with it. There are no particular terms like specified by the parents, like, oh, if I back out, I'll pay you $1 million.
Right.
But you know, the cheirem or whatever it is applies.
So for an off engagement, you still get the cheirem even if you look like you're
saying. I think that's the view. Yeah, I think that's the standard view. So
maybe that's just the reason why it's better to get married and divorced than to break off engagement so you don't get a cheirem.
That's the Gruz point. The Gruz point is that there's no way out of the.
But
there's no rightful way to back out of your commitment or the cheirem.
Right.
Unless you get the mechila from the other side. That's the. Right. All right, Zev, we'll give you the last. Oh, Romy, you have a hand also? Zev and Romy.
All right, yeah. So just on that point that you mentioned about the get being from the Erisin, but the qualifications being from dependent on the Nesuin.
Yeah.
So I forgot where we saw it, but I think there was one of the Megaros that said that there's a question of whether the not having the proper justification is like comparable to a puzzle get.
Yeah, that was the Chasam Sofer suggestion.
Okay. So does that bear on that question? Like if you say that the if you say the qualifications are like sort of external to the get, like they're not, the get is really a thing from the ear, so this is a human thing, so it's like that wouldn't be comparable.
I think it's a really sharp point. Everybody sees Zev's point. Zev's saying if you like the model that the get might be necessary to dissolve the Erisin. Right? Like the Rambam's model, not the Barbanel picture. And you see the justification, Mishnah Daf Tzadi, that pertains to the Nesuin. That's the Marashtam's theory. Right? So Zev wants to now connect us to the view, the Machlokes Chasam Sofer versus Rashi, about if you don't have the justification, does that possible to get, or does it simply make it wrongful, or that Bezalel will force you to not go ahead, right, with the divorce? So Zev saying that the Chasam Sofer is the possible to get does not align nicely with the picture that the justification relates to in the suing. Right? You want to say that if the get pertains to the Erisin, then at most, and there's like the separate issue of justification, at most, like Bezin will force you to not give a get, but it won't internally possible to get.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's very sharp.
It is in the Chasam
Sofer. What?
Chasam Sofer Rashi is in the Chasam
Sofer. The Chasam Sofer Rashi debate is in, at least for Papa's question, right, in the Gemara. Right. But I think you could say that Havamina really only exists, right? What's the, at what level of What does that have to mean, or that question? Again, for a puppet, it seems to be an open legal question. It gets answered by the Amaran and the Gemara.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Everybody good with the Romy? You have a comment on the Arusa Nesua distinction?
Yeah, first of all, doesn't it make more sense to just do some Pesukim on that to say that the Shos from Deiso should be more parallel to the Nesua?
Yeah, Shil Chami Beso.
I'm saying, and that's what breaks up the Nisuin and nothing, meaning not justification, but the act of sending it out the same way it's kind of ambiguous, abstract.
Yeah, like there are two Dinim and Piruk. Like, just like there are two ways of creating the marriage, there are two stages of creating marriage, there are two stages of severing it, right? Mm-hmm. There's the Get, Pturin, that undoes the legal bond, and there's also Shil Chami Beso. Right, literally, garesh asam azos, like sending somebody away. So there's some physical separation also. Yeah, I think that's totally right. I actually want to say further than that. Let's go back to this little picture here. Erisin, you have the get that's there to dissolve the erisin. Nisuin, so, Romy wants to say shiluach, right? The Shil Chami Beso is how you... I actually would think a little differently. I would say that... this is one way I want to read the Barbanel theory. That the Nisuin could be already gone once there's Sina and Ketata. That destroys the Nisuin. Like Ad Kedei Kach, right? Like the Shil Chami Beso might be that's like a result of the Gerushin.
I think you're saying justification. Just you don't need to actually just justification is its presence or in a big step.
I mean, the presence of the justification, at least in some cases, of Sinna means that like there's no Nisuin here. Like what are you saving? You're saving like a skeletal legal bond, right? But that's not an important thing to save. But that once the Nisuin's already gone. Right, like as the Abar Barnell said a little too strongly, he's like, well, once there's Sinna, then like you know this is not etzem etzamai basar mibsari. That was his formulation. So I like your point that the get is for the erisin, and my point is to be like the justification is really like a metric for determining whether there's a nisuin still in existence.
Which basically means you can't pick up a nisuin.
So you might by rut, like if everybody agrees.
Unless you say that also means that there is no nisuin.
Right.
No, what I'm saying,
by breaking up, you mean
no such thing as destroying a nisuin. Just if there's no nisuin, you're allowed to go in here.
It's interesting. I think at a certain point, though, like let's say you give the get and you separate, at that point, right, the nisuin disappears. Is that your point?
Meaning that's the most extreme way of bringing up, the closest you can get to bringing up a nisuin is going through the whole process so that, like, mamela, there is no nisuin.
Correct. That's very consistent with the analysis of Erisin versus nisuin, right? The whole point is that nisuin is not a legal... Yoni was getting at this in his comment. The nisuin is not just, like, a legal thing that you, like, hit a button or like, you sign papers that it dissolves.
But that's a novel idea conceptually that you're never ever bringing up a nisuin. You're just, it either doesn't exist.
So you can do a lot of things.
At most, you can make it dissolve.
Right.
Huh?
What's the difference whether you're breaking it up or whether it broke up? The reason why you're breaking it up is because of the
I think Akiva is saying that you're saying something so sharp, it's almost like too sharp. Right?
No, because the point is that for most cases, it actually means that your nisuin isn't there.
It's already gone.
In
correct.
Some cases, you can make it that, in that roundabout way, where you give the get through the whole process and then, therefore, there's no nisuin, in which case, yeah, it's not such a relevant distinction.
So one way of saying...
I didn't say it was a conceptual distinction.
Well?
I said it was a conceptual.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very, very longish. Does anybody get this idea? The idea is that something like sinna... Something like Erbas Davar, Ketata, those things, and I think this is what's beautiful about the Abar Barnell's picture, is that like that's those are all symptoms or consequences of the Nisuin not existing. that's kind of the main. And that's parallel with the idea of how a Nisuan is created. It's created through like the beginning of this kind of joint marital life, and when that doesn't exist in the right way, then it falls apart. Josh?
Probably way beyond the scope of this discussion, but like, I would be interested in like
plugging in
the Yibum, or trying to find an example. Maybe there's a case of like there's something like an Nisuan but no Erusin to see what it still require, or is there any Simcha in Yibum, let's say, or...
Well, Yibum is very complicated because it could be that the Erusin of the first husband applies to the...
Because there's a Zika already?
Yeah. Like, that's a discussion. Like, a lot of Rishonim say that.
Yeah.
So it's not a relationship without an Erusin. It just has an Erusin that's earlier in time that gets applied to it. So that's tricky, right? Okay, any other thoughts on this? Ariel?
Yeah, I don't know if it's too rushy or whatnot, but your notion that the Sinai will not account for a breach of any suin, explain both the notion.
Yeah, I think Sinai really makes, it's intuitive that Sinai, if there's real animosity, right, between each other, then that's not like an suin. But yeah, go ahead, Ariel.
Right, so A, does that account for the notion that when you decide to be a church, is as soon as you would be, and also be a Tokusatsu, also a suin.
Yeah, so I think Ariel is totally right. This is what we're going to get to later on in Makoros. So the absence of Nisuin correlates with Isurin that get triggered by the absence of Nisuin. So, well, so we're going to see Dinim, actually that come up on Daf Tzadi even. Right, that once there's a decision to get divorced, there's no more heter for intimacy. Right, that's one of the dinim. We'll see a Gemara Nedarim along these lines. So Ariel, I think, is saying very nicely that that flows from the lack of, like, there's no more nisuin. Right, erusin is not erusin itself doesn't trigger like the heter for intimacy between them. Like, there's some status of nisuin that does that. And then if you buy the idea that Sina Tata undercuts the Nisuin, or even you can put it this way, like Das Ligarish. Like, once there's a decision to get divorced, that undercuts the Nisuin. And that explains why there's no more head there for intimacy, which is something that comes up in our Gemara. Great. Yeah, Ariel, it's one of the things I'm going to connect to this later on when we get to that. Kiva?
How can something fluctuate like that? Like, the legal proceedings of Nisuin, the legal ramifications that have an act of Nisuin are going to function based on whether, like, you just woke up in a bad mood and now you hate your wife, but then tomorrow you're going to love her?
Don't they? I alluded to this earlier, actually.
How does that practically work?
Yeah. So I actually think that it's kosher to say that something like the status of Nisua could fluctuate, or it could be temporarily defeated by certain things. Right, I think there's a way to say it that way.
So how would all the ramifications be, like, not in the and in terms of the...
Yeah, so I think you have to say that not everything. But we'll see, like, for example, once you have Das Ligarish or things like that, you'll see that certain demons, so for example, one view in the Gemara is that there's no more Chiyuv Mezonos. Like, there's no more support obligation between the couple. And then also the Isser Via kicks in. So I think Ariel's point is that it's a plausible point. You're right. It's difficult to say that it vitiates all of the dinim of Nisuin, but you could say that it peels it away, right? Or it erodes it. In fact, we'll see other nafkamin after this. We'll see a discussion of Avelos. Even before there's the get is given.
Meaningful, like, calling, like, not being able to bury it.
No, forget about that. So your wife dies after you decide that you would get divorced. Or you die after.
But is that like a 100% we're going to get divorced? It's just a matter of time for, like.
So we have to figure out what is Das Ligarish. We have to figure out what that is.
Maybe that's the point of Erusin. I mean, maybe the point of Erusin is that it's doing conflict like that, but you always have the Erusin hold.
Yeah, you're always. There's some legal bond that's, like, permanent and firm, but, like, again, like, I think the fluctuation of Nisuin is somewhat intuitive when you think of it along the lines of Vedalak Vishabhai Vasarefa. It's a much more delicate type of relationship. Right. You could pass out things, I alluded to this. So here are three Nafimina. You might be able to attach it to other parts of Nisuin also, like that. Parts of like even the, well, I'll hold off on this thought. We'll get there later. Yoni.
The dynamic that I'm kind of setting up right now in my head is that Erison is more like the legal and Nisuin is more the emotional and the intimate and things like that. And the reason that we're giving for divorce and forgiving and get is like sin and kata, things that are more like emotional, kind of like the way that you interact with a person instead of legal, which is kind of making me question like the whole Torah Tumu that we did today in terms of like Siva Acheret. That, like, there could be a very practical reason that you're getting divorced. That's like, you don't want her to be a mehuna, or you don't want her to be yivam, or something like that. But then you're still giving the get on the nisuin level. So it's not sinna or tether or something like that.
Yeah, except that there, when you have both parties agreeing, this is like the consent of both sides.
But then wouldn't it be like an Harrison thing?
It's hard to know. That? I think it's hard to know.
But does that make sense, that dynamic, that Harrison's legal and nisuin's emotional?
I think emotional might be too weak. If the Rav were here, he would say it's existential.
But then if they both agree for practical reasons, then that's not like an existential dissolving of the marriage.
You might say it. I think Romy wants to say it is, because like at a certain point, once your mindset is that like you're going your separate ways, then like there is no Rohan es nafsham kilu heim echad.
But what if it is? What if it's you're going off to war and I don't want to have to be in a guna, but I still think we're perfect, you know?
Yeah. It's a good question. What happens?
You know, you still want,
I think the answer still is like, no, you're willing to start, you're willing to part ways. Like that's
practical reason. Like it's not like Arish, not because of,
you're saying existential bonds.
Not because of this existential union.
Existential bonds can't be severed by pragmatic concerns.
I don't know. I like the concept of like the wife waiting for the husband to return at war. And then it's like, okay, she's still emotionally attached to him, but like for practical reasons, she doesn't want to become a girlfriend.
That's what I'm saying. I think emotional attachment is too weak of a, I don't think it's like, you know, I wouldn't psychologize it.
So existential. Or like they have kids and, you know, like she's just waiting for them to come back. But practically, it makes more sense logically to not become a good one just in case.
Then they could also get remarried.
Can
yeah.
Let's
yeah.
say he's a Kohen.
Yeah, if they're a Kohen, you're in trouble.
I'm just saying there is this model where you can't do it either. There is this model where it's not existential. Even if, okay. Yeah. Um, Ned, Bechavod. I'm thinking of, if we're thinking about, is this about the relationship, or is this about the institution? It's about the relationship, and maybe explain something. Where, you know, different.
Right, I think this is really a separate question from the Reluchensin Chakir of Abnad Mechavero versus the institution of marriage.
I'm saying, put
that issue aside for a second, just look at the formal structure here of like a get flowing from Erison, and like Nisuin being a legal acquisition has to be dissolved by a legal dissolution, a kind of intimate bond. Is eroded or undone by the opposite of.
So in that case, there are other situations. You got the Holy Serbia, where, you know, if they're drunk or if there's anger, in which case, you know, that also might affect their awareness of the relationship.
Yes. Yes. Things similar things, and not just das ligaris is one example, kapens in our other.
Yeah.
But we'll look at the Gemara in the dark. Right? The B'nai Tesh Amidos. We'll talk about that. In fact, I have to work this out more, but there's another, I think like some of the Dinam of Midah fit into this picture also. Like the fact that a person's spouse could be considered an erva to them. Just something to put into the picture here. We're actually going to see something along these lines in a second. Somebody had a thought, or
yeah,
I didn't think we'd end up getting so sucked into this. But
discussing marriage in the context of just being a constant, like, balancing between different points of wanting to get divorced.
What?
Marriage in the context of you're kind of like like constant different levels, different constantly fluctuating between different levels of like dissatisfaction and unsatisfaction.
It's a very negative spin on it.
So I think you just made it. What did we say?
Well, I think one thought is like, you know, to take Zev's encounter on the way to Shear today. You know, it's like I think that idea of, you know, to borrow the Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky phrase of Ro'enas Atzman Kilo Emechad, or whether it's the Ramban's formulation in the beginning of Bereishis, I think that's like a very difficult, right, aspiration. It's a very difficult thing to maintain. And so the thought is that it, like the level of that union does fluctuate. Right? I think that's...
You're constantly fluctuating between different levels of Das Ligarish. That was
I wouldn't put it in terms of Das Ligarish.
It's very pessimistic.
I think Das Ligarish is like one thing that's like could be a big defeater of the Davak Behishto.
Like, Das that you have to have and like vocalize? Or, like,
no, we'll see that Ramban in the Tshuva says that even if the woman doesn't have a ksuva, so if a woman doesn't have a ksuva, there's a prohibition of yichud between the couple. Why? Yes, got back to Ezra's story from the wedding. Right. Why? So the Ramban says, oh, that's just a version of Das Ligarish.
It's true.
Like, if there's nothing, if there's no economic sanctions making the marriage difficult, then it's almost as if, like, the wife thinks that, like, the husband's going to divorce her. So that's, like, a very low threshold for triggering. And there's a prohibition of Yichud in that case. But we're going to look at the sugya. This is a sugya that's downstream, so... Stay tuned. Okay, I wanted to go to Beis Shammai and Mitzvah Ligarish, but since we're in this discussion here, anyway, I'll just sneak in one thought from Rav Lichtenstein about Rabbi Akiva Shita. We're going to move to Beis Shammai. We spoke a lot about Beis Hillel, the justification, right? We spoke a lot about Beis Hillel. We spoke briefly about Rabbi Akiva, Matzah Charesna Aymena, and then we're going to talk more about Beis Shammai. I'm going to say something about Rabbi Akiva before I move to Beis Shammai, and it relates, I guess, sneaking in into this discussion here. So we saw Rabbi Akiva says Matzah Charesna Aymena. So this is on page 20 of the source sheet for a second. I'm just going to go back. The number has probably changed since whenever you printed it out, Josh. But, so.
Sometimes I just see the page move.
Yeah, like lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not always logical, also sometimes like it moves up that isn't necessarily being there. It's like a source that's removed. Sometimes it's just
weird.
Feels random.
Just complain to people who work for Google. So, Rabbi Akiva, there's a sheet of the Pri Chadash.
Or the Pach.
Who says that it's only. So I actually have a different view of Rabbi Akiva, which we'll talk about at some point. Rabbi Akiva says, Matzah Charesna no, Aymena, and we saw on the tour, it means Noi Shel Yofi, which connotes like literally prettier. Right, that was Rabbi Akiva's view. And we saw two versions in the Achronim, whether Rabbi Akiva requires a justification or no justification. Right, that was evident, that was implicit in the Mishnah Melech that we just saw. Right, when he wants to apply Rabbi Akiva to Arusa. Now, we saw the Meiri interpreting Rabbi Akiva on page 20. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Afilu Mata Acheres Na Aymena, Kilomer Afilu Below Shum Tam. Alam Mitzad Arusa. Without any reason, and we had a back and forth in Shir, Below Shum Tam, Mitzad Arusa, and it's Rutsa Matam. Let's assume for a moment that the Meiri means this, Beli Shum Tam, strictly construed, right? You don't need any reason at all. Rabbi Akiva means no justification. That's one reading of Rabbi Akiva. So, we have Meir's interpretation, Belitam, without pause, right? Everybody agree on this reading of Meir for now? If you go to the Pri Chadash, in Simon Kofiates, he says that this is limited to Matzah Acheres Na Haimena. Aval in Matzah Acheres Ashira Haimena B'yoser B'shvil Ha'osher Ein L'sanosa V'eino Yachal L'garsha Bal Karcha. there's a strange thing that he throws in sin out here. So it's an interesting point. But the Yechadav says it's dafka for na haimena, to the exclusion of Ashira. You can't, if you find a richer spouse, that's not a reason to divorce your present spouse, even according to Rabbi Akiva. So he's assuming that Rabbi Akiva requires justification. Just non haimena is a valid justification on this view. Okay. That's against the meter. And I assume that's also the view in the Mishnah Melech, right? Who thought that when the Rus is mentioned, that Rabbi Akiva requires some justification. Now, I think we have to analyze what is na haimena. The tour thought it was noi shel yofi, which is fine, that's a view. But Rav Lichtenstein, I noticed this in his shirim, reads this into the Rabbi Akiva Shita. Somebody take a stab at this? Josh? Yeah. As a side, I want to, guys, look into the connotation of Naya Haimet. Like, what does Naya connote?
Well, you said earlier in the year that, like, Naya, like, when you heard it, made it sound like it was just, like, more pleasant. Which, like, something we haven't seen, at least in these two sources, that's not what they're suggesting.
Right, that's not what they're suggesting, correct. Yeah. Right. But it's good to look at what does Naya mean? Like, in the Lashon HaMishnah, what does Naya connote? Like, in the Torah, what does Naya connote? Clearly, a lot of these mepharshim are assuming it's beauty. Go on, Kanira. So this is Rav Lichtenstein's interpretation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you mean? What's Rav Lichtenstein saying?
He's saying that it's like a. It's tough, we're makal on men, let's say, when it comes to something which is, you know, related to beauty and perhaps sexual temptation, something like that. But when it comes to something else, she's just richer, we're not makal on that. That's what I was really saying.
Okay. Say a little more though. Do you think this is pashtus in Rabbi Akiva? Like, is there a gap between when you read Rabbi Akiva Matzah Acheres Na Haimena and when you read this analysis or this interpretation of Rabbi Akiva? Is this how you understood Rabbi Akiva?
Well, I think it's also difficult to understand Rabbi Akiva because he's basing on the pasuk in Lotim Tzachim Beinah. So he's basing on that pasuk where it makes it sound like it's a din on this wife you have now, but we understand the Mishnah Rabbi Akiva to mean it's a din on the new wife, nothing to do with the old wife.
Okay.
So,
okay, that's an interesting point. But what's Rav Lichtenstein doing here, Romy?
I mean, I think that he is actually not such a far step because he's saying that you can't. It's acknowledging a reality about people, which is that they have to be Tahara. But that's not really the point. The point is that because of the Tahara, you can no longer live with this woman because
people
would feel like you don't like her anymore or you.
Yeah, so Rav Lichtenstein reads the Rabbi Akiva as not as being about the aspiration of the virtues of the second marriage.
Not the first.
Right, he's trying to. Rav Lichtenstein reads in here, Lo yuchal lahamshech velichios betzurat kinan ishto, kasher libo nasan lacheres. Right, he's so fixated on this other person that, like, now his present marriage has lost its vitality. I think Roni was saying something like this, right? I think Roni had a view earlier in the year.
Yeah,
you kind of think back. It sounds familiar.
I have a lot of views.
But Rolandine reads this into Shita Rabbi Akiva. Right? Matzah Acheres Na Haimena doesn't mean like, oh, I found someone prettier. That's the pashut shot in the way the Torah takes it. Rolandine thinks what it means is that this guy has become obsessed with this other woman, such that he can no longer have a good relationship with his present wife. And I think that works nicely with this kind of obliteration of the present Nisuan. Right? So the point is, you don't need sinna per se to get you there. Rav Lichtenstein's reading into Rabbi Akiva that, like, this present marriage is no longer able to achieve v'dabak b'yishto etzemet samay. Like that perspective had just been sucked out of this marriage. Again, for yetzer hara reasons, right? For nothing other than the frailty of the human condition. But that's what makes Rabbi Akiva's shita tick, according to Rabbi Lichtenstein. Does everybody see that?
Takes away the absurdity of Rabbi Akiva.
Yeah, totally. It totally takes away the absurdity of Rabbi Akiva. And it's totally at odds with the Meiri, right? The Meiri's point is that you require no justification, right? Lichtenstein's saying that, like, no, this is one way in which the present Nisuin is no longer viable. That's what you get in this phrase here. V'lo yuchal lahamshech v'lichas v'tzuit kina amishto. There may be actually an indication of this in the Pri Chadash himself. He says, "B'shvil ha'osher ein lisanosa." It's almost like he's not saying that matzacheres nahaymena in and of itself is a justification according to Rabbi Akiva. The question is, what are halachically recognized grounds for, like, this? What's a legitimate thing for this relationship to be considered deteriorated? So, like, if you were to say, like, oh, I really can't stand my wife anymore because she's not rich enough, so then we look at you and say, like, it's terrible. Right? But Rabbi Lichtenstein thinks, if you were to say, oh, it has to do with the beauty, then there at least there's like a reasonable Yetzer Hara consideration. Why can't the Yetzer Hara also be obsessed with money? It's not as strong. That's the view. Okay, Ezra and then Rumi.
I think there's also an interesting thing with this Goron in that he's reading this into Rabbi Akiva, but also an element where he isn't reading something into Rabbi Akiva that a lot of the other people seem, or the Rishon HaRonim seem to, which is that, at least based on what he says, it seems that Rabbi Akiva is able to reply even if there's no realistic chance of the marriage happening. Like theoretically,
yes, right, correct, like
a celebrity.
Yeah. Yeah, you're saying an interesting nafkamina here is that he's obsessed with this, the husband's obsessed with some celebrity, and that ruins his marriage. And like the Ibn Ezra, right, like the Ibn Ezra, the Ibn Ezra in the Sach mode, he knows he has no shot at marrying the celebrity, but you're saying that's still enough to undermine his present relation. Yeah, that's a good. Whereas my reading of the Barbanel's version of what I call Rabbi Akiva is like, no, there's got to be, it's right, the capacity to find somebody who's matim, that's what would justify the, right, you're right, Lichtenstein's definitely not going that direction. Great point, Ezra. Ariel and then Romy.
Yeah, so according to Lichtenstein, we say that the three-way focus is really the three-way focus on how you define what constitutes a breach of the sin.
Yeah, I think that's one way of putting it.
Right, based on the full act of legal violation of the sin, they still have to say, if you want to learn the sin, always is.
Right, how could, according to Beis Shammai, it's like, how could you say there's, so I like the way Ariel's putting it. Ariel's saying, Beis Shammai's view is, how can you talk about the Dabak Ishto when she is, when she's like pursuing other relationships? That's like Beis Shammai, that's Arba Stavar. Right, and Rabbi Akiva is just saying, look, there's a lower threshold for what vitiates in the Nisuin, right?
Yeah, there's still somewhere between that.
Yeah, somewhere between, whether it's in, if she's always frustrating his ends, that was the Chasam Sofer's version, right? Then that's not there's no longer a genuine Nisuin. Or if there's Sina, according to Chazas Mechoke. Right? Or if there's Lehaknito, according to the Tfaris Yisrael. Yeah, great framework. But that's exactly what I'm doing here with, you have that in a reference to be a Akiva view. I think it's certainly plausible in Beis Hillel. And then we get more into the Beis Shammai. Okay. Romy, you have the last word. You want the last word on this part of the discussion?
No.
You did have your hand up, no?
Yeah, but I do think it's interesting, like that formulation of Rabbi Akiva.
So just say that you want the last word, because now you're piping up.
No, now that I'm not even going to do more. But
like that formulation of Rabbi Akiva makes it, you know, okay, Ms. Shammai is saying if she pursued another relationship, and then Rabbi Akiva is saying, and even if he's kind of pursuing, you know,
like, right, at least psychologically, or yeah, I think it's a nice framework you're saying. There's symmetry between the views.
Right.
Great. Okay. This turned out to be more fruitful than I initially anticipated. That's great. So let's now turn to go deeper into Beis Shammai's view. And I want to introduce Beis Shammai's view along the following lines. So Beis Shammai holds Erbas Devar, correct? Yeah, Erbas Devar? That's great. We don't really know what Erbas Devar is yet. We have to figure out what Erbas Devar means. I'm particularly interested in the relationship between the following two issues. What am I interested in? Which two issues?
Josh,
you know?
That's where it is. Yeah, I'm going to go for it. Mitzvah
Lagarish versus Eidim Ha'ar. Close. That would be taking us back a little bit to our Zivuk Rishon and Zivuk Sheni thing. It is related to Beis Shammai. But I don't want us to double back too much. As much as I would love to do that. I'm interested in the relationship between Rishus Lagarish and Mitzvah Lagarish. Now, I think it's very clear, according to Rabbi Akiva and Beis Hillel, that these are very different propositions. One is about the license to get divorced, right? So I think Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, sorry, not Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva are clearly about Rishus Lagarish. That's the Mishnah Daf Tzadi. When do you have license? When do you have allowance to divorce? Right, on penalty of Isser on the standard view. Right. What about Beis Shammai? Is Beis Shammai talking about Rishus Lagarish? Is he interested in Rishus Lagarish? Or is Beis Shammai talking about mitzvah lagarish?
I take it a step further.
What?
Is it like a chobah lagarish? Like when you say mitzvah, do you mean?
Yeah. Well, mitzvah, you want to say chiyuv? Interesting question.
Yeah.
Like, is it the proper thing or is it obligatory?
Yeah, or is it like a chobah lagarish?
Chiyuv lagarish? And we know from the Mishnayos in Ksuvos that there is a separate category of kofim lagarish, right? Mm-hmm. On the Koros. But we'll come to Chiyuv Lagarish in a minute. But is Beis Shammai giving us a theory of when divorce is allowed, or is he giving us a theory of when divorce is required? Tani?
It would seem to be when divorce is required, just because in general, if a woman does discover she's Naseres to Chol Adam.
Well, she's Naseres to the Boel and to her husband.
I thought you can't marry somebody. I thought we saw it.
Like Mark frowned upon it.
Like somebody who, like, they call her Zona, she's not in, no man's able to marry her. There wasn't, I remember reading that somewhere. I don't remember what I'm saying.
So you gotta bring the good books to Shear.
Yeah. So forgetting about that then. In the Yerushalmi, doesn't it talk about, could just be maybe I
don't know, what's the relationship? So where does the big shot? So I think the standard view is what is Beis Shammai, Ned, do you know? Beis Shammai about Rishus or Mitzvah Lagarish?
Rishus.
Yeah? Well, let's see, let's look at the Gemara here that really gets us started on this. It's not Beis Shammai, that's true. So let's see the Gemara on Gittin Tzadi Amid Aleph. Tanya, Reb Meir Omer. Volunteered. Ned, take it away. Tanya.
Okay.
So this is like literally the Gemara's version of you toss the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Right? Like the fly falls into your wine. You don't just toss out the fly, you toss out the wine also. Right? Eino shoseyu. And that's Midas Papas Ben Yehuda, Shehaya Noel. What does that mean?
He would lock the door when he would leave his house.
He would lock the door when he would leave his house, and it seemed like his wife didn't have the key.
Yes.
Right?
I know your father said cheer yesterday, apparently, about this.
What did he say?
The red flag.
Papas Ben Yehuda.
Yes.
Right, so if you saw Rashi, right, it really didn't turn out well for Papas Ben Yehuda. I mean, that's the takeaway, according to Rashi, that ultimately his wife was so unhappy. Right, what happened? She was Mizana Tachta. Right? It led to infidelity. It's like one of those, it's the Gemara's giving us a lesson. Every Chumrah comes to a Kula, right? I'm going to say it's like everything has a reaction.
What's the critical line? Is it the Evo or the Sintatato?
Sounds like he's saying that she started to despise him.
What's the problem?
You're saying what's the
primary issue?
I thought it was just a cause and effect. Like, she came to resent him, his wife came to resent him, and that resentment led to Mizana Tachtov. What? You're saying is there maybe some importance and some significance to...
Maybe itself is significant.
Yeah, I agree that it's significant. Again, in this Shaka Vitaria, it's not clear, like, if the Gemara is trying to make a specific point about this. But it's criticizing Papas Ben Yehuda, right? If he's overly strict, it ultimately had bad results. Mitokach Eva Nechneses Beinehem. Fine, so that's Papas Ben Yehuda's Mida. Go on. So what's this Mida?
Right, he has a cup. Fly falls in, he'll take out the fly and drink the wine anyway, and that's sort of the standard Benoni approach, I guess.
Yeah, it's a little more liberal, right? Here it's fine for the wife to have some social relations, right? That's Midas Kol Adam.
And just her relatives. So.
What's that?
Just her relatives.
Shemedaberes Machea Vekrovea Umenicha. Yeah. That's right.
Like
say again?
The very expansive term, like this is Sicilians.
Yeah, it's like some reasonable degree of interaction. But then there's one that's overly liberal, which the Gemara seems to be criticizing. Vishta Adam. It's very jarring imagery, right? It's like the fly falls in and you try to like delicate on the fly. Yeah, so Zuhi Midas Adam Ra. It's crude, right? The Gemara is saying there's something prust about it. Okay, so the Gemara here describes this kind of woman who runs around with her hair wild. Tova Bashuk, there's some debate about what this means. This, what? Spun?
Yeah.
Tava is spun in a way. We'll see the Rishonim. Some Rishonim think it like her first like a type of like hair makeup or something like that. Something that goes on your forehead. Upruma mishnei tzadeh. Rashi says like open shirt. That's Rashi's view, right? Seems like the French had distinct ways of dressing even in Rashi's day. Well,
and Rashi knew it.
Right.
His wife did not lock him in the house.
Really. Right. It's true. The Domio Shevet Sarfas. It's a good phrase. So, Verochetas in Bnei Adam. So, there are two views of what that means. Like, one view is that she's like bathing with men. Is that the first view?
Yeah. No, it's not the Bnei Adam. It's just a place.
It's all of them.
Well, that would mean as impene adam, so, but right. So the first view in the Gemara seems to be she's actually bathing with men. The Gemara says that's too, yeah, right. That doesn't even like register. Like there's nobody. The way Tosafot reads it is like there's nobody who doesn't divorce their wife.
Or it doesn't happen.
Well,
or it doesn't happen.
Or it doesn't happen.
The first thing he says is maybe nobody. Everyone's not good. The second thing is maybe it's just there are no such case in the history of.
Right. So the Gemara then tempers it and says, no, it means that she's rochetz b'makom shnei adam rochetzim. It's not clear what this means. Rashi here says this. What do you think Rashi means? What?
It's like you have a swimming pool and there's like different hours for men and women, and I guess one group is going, another group is going.
Yeah, I think he means something more promiscuous than that, right? I think. What?
It's like, but she's like specifically going in at a time where it's like she knows they're coming out at that time. And
yeah, it sounds like there's some sort of inappropriate encounter. Like, I don't think it means like one person walks in with like a bag of towels and one person walks out and they kind of like see each other. I assume it means that, like,
you know, the Havmi and the Gemara is that they're all bathing together, and Mars says that's too absurd, and the Gemara's answer is no. It means that, like, they're, as the men are walking out, or as the men are leaving, she's already going into bathe. Okay, so she's, like, revealed to them in some bad way. That's the way I read this.
Right? V'hinichnas is le'enehem. Not just that they know that she's going to bathe, but, like, she's, like, exposed to them while she's bathing. Okay. So they're clothed, but I guess the thought is that she isn't. So that's pretty promiscuous, I think. So what happens in that case? What does the Gemara say, Ned? Zu mitzvah min haTorah ligarsha. That's a very strong word, right? So this type of woman, it's a commandment to get divorced from, or to divorce. So this is the first time we've encountered literally mitzvah ligarsha. We saw a version of this in Rashi, actually, haTorah, right at the outset. But here we have mitzvah ligarsha. Whoa. This is Rav Meir's view in the Gemara. What?
Here?
Yeah. Isn't this Rav Meir's view in the Gemara? Or higher Tanya or Meir over? So this is all within Rav Meir's analysis, I think. So this is the first time we have mitzvah min haTorah ligarsha. How does this, is this Erev HaZohar?
No.
So how does this relate to Shitas Beis Shammai?
That's right.
You think it's a version out of Beis Shammai?
Yeah, some sort of subcategory of Erev.
Okay. And Shenemar, we even cite Ki Matza Ba Erev HaZohar. Right, so we're citing the same pasuk that this is supposed to be a version of Erev HaZohar. It does seem to be on its face different from Beis Shammai himself. Right, well,
the Yerushalmi kind of takes it that way.
Yeah, so we'll look at that. We'll look at that Yerushalmi. So I want us to, we have to stop here for today. But I want us to start thinking about the, why would it be a mitzvah garish? Why would it be a mitzvah garish? And what's the relationship between mitzvah ligarish and reshus ligarish? Is it possible that the only time there's reshus ligarish is if there's also a mitzvah ligarish? Could that be a version of Beis Shammai's view? Meaning, nothing neutral justifies divorce. The only thing that could justify divorce is if there's actually a duty, a mitzvah, to get divorced. Everybody see that? So, the only type of justification is a mitzvah justification. Is that Beis Shammai's view? That's what I want us to consider. I want us to consider what type of mitzvah this is. And I want us to start thinking about what's the relationship between the mitzvah ligaresh and kfiyah ligaresh. Those mishnayos in Yevamos, in Ksuvos. And especially, does it need to be a mitzvah to have kfiyah ligarish? Or does, on the face of it, sound like this is even a higher level, right? Because if we're forcing, or no, maybe there's cases of kfiyah ligarish where there's no mitzvah ligarish.
Serves so much our kfiyah mitzvah situation.
Yeah, there's no obligation to get divorced. There's no, and just because the husband has a terrible odor, that's not a mitzvah ligarish, but nevertheless kofen ligarish. So I want us to think about the relationship between these three things: mitzvah, bia, and rishus. Okay, shkayach everyone.